Hello, and welcome to Ether, the podcast associated with the Department of the Air Force's professional strategic journal, Ether, the Journal of Strategic Air Power and Space Power. I'm Laura Thurston Goodrow, and today I'll be visiting with Dr. Wendy Whitman Cobb about her article, A Commercial Space Security Dilemma, The Dynamics of Commercial Competition in Space, in our winter 2023 issue. Dr. Whitman Cobb is a professor of strategy and security studies at the School of Advanced Air and Space Studies here at Maxwell Air Force Base. Her research focuses on the political and institutional dynamics of space policy, public opinion of space exploration, and the influence of commerce on potential space conflict. Her latest book is Privatizing Peace: How Commerce Can Reduce Conflict in Space, and she is the co-author of the upcoming Space Policy in the 21st Century, a first-of-its-kind space policy textbook. Welcome to the podcast, Wendy.
Thanks for having me.
So first, let's talk about the background of your interest in the subject of your article, but space in general, so our listeners kind of know where you're coming from.
Yeah, I have been a longtime fan of space. I grew up in Florida, one of the rare, you know, actual Floridians born and raised there, and grew up watching space shuttles launch all the time. From when I was very little, I remember my mom always taking me outside to point out the shuttle launching. And so I'd always had this sort of fascination with space, but not super great on the math and science end. So when I got to college, I was originally a theater major, believe it or not, and quickly realized that was probably not going to be the path for me. But I was taking an American federal government class at the time. And my school, I went to University of Central Florida, I found they had a space policy and a space history course. And so puzzle pieces started to fit together for me, where I went, maybe I can major in political science and be able to study space from that perspective, and thereby be able to really kind of do what I love and follow what I love, but do it in a way that fits me the best. And so it was that. From there on in, I was a political science major. I don't think there was ever a point where I was like, I want to be a professor. It just sort of happened along the way. I got my bachelor's, then master's was next. And then sort of it just happened that here I am. And so from the start, I have been studying space policy and just love watching launches. Still love watching launches. I will go down there and watch them whenever I can. My mom is still in Orlando. Whenever I'm down there, I try to get over and watch a launch. So definitely still doing that same thing from when I was little.
That's great. My husband was stationed at Patrick for a couple of years. And so when I would go down to see him, he was geobatching. I went to a couple. It was very cool.
They're really impressive. And I, you know, it's hard to, you know, I actually had somebody ask me last weekend, you know, what they had two daughters. So how do I get my daughters into space? And I said, take them to a launch. You have to see it and to believe it. And so he thought about it. He's like, yeah, you're right. So I think they're going to try and get down next. So
That's great. That's a great way. That's a great way. Then kids kind of put that idea to like something real. So
absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. So as we get in now to the article that you wrote for us, I first think that for our listeners who aren't as familiar as you are with this and your colleagues that work in the field, let's talk first about the third space age. What defines the third space age? Because it's only been recently that I realized we were actually in the third space age, because I, you know, that's not something that I think is a sort of necessarily general knowledge among our readers. So if you could talk about that and then discuss the role of global commercial space companies in this third space age that we're in.
Yeah, the notion of a third space age, I think, is some new nomenclature I've seen just starting out. What we in the scholarly field have typically been looking at and calling this sort of era is sort of the new space era, to distinguish it from an old space era, which was largely state driven. It was mostly major countries, United States, Soviet Union / Russia, and then later on China, who really had the resources to do big things like space, just generally. But we've seen since, you know, the early 2000s is a real shift to commercial players being a viable factor in space for a lot of reasons. There's been technological changes. The big companies that have really spearheaded this have really focused on reducing costs through reusable launch vehicles. You get some other technology changes in terms of standardized CubeSats and smaller tech, so you don't have to pay as much to lift it into space. And a lot of policy shifts too, especially following the 2003 Columbia disaster with the space shuttle. NASA really starts to change their focus to trying to bring in more commercial companies. That policy shift is really solidified in the Obama administration. And so now, not only do you have viable commercial players, but you also have a government that is encouraging that. So now there's a market that they can play in. So that has really helped lead to this boom in commercial players being a major factor. So it's no longer restricted to just states that have the types of capabilities to not only get to space, but do really cool things there. And so because of that power, and that really is a massive amount of power, these commercial players are starting to become important in their own right and how we think about space in terms of how we deal with it, in terms of designing rules of the road. Because yes, while they're working for governments mostly, they do have independent ambitions and goals of their own that are also coming into play here. So this third space age era, I think if I had to boil it down to one thing, it's the emergence of commercial players, private companies doing spaceflight and moving that sort of impetus away from states to private players. And that has been really huge in just opening up all these types of things that we can do with space now become more accessible, become cheaper, and therefore more frequent by a whole host of people, not just countries, but companies, organizations, less developed countries. So there are way more players in the game now than there ever have been in our previous space ages.
Yeah, and that, you know, has implications for things like the 1967 Outer Space Treaty and so many elements of our world across dime categories and greater. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you know, I think they kind of envisioned something like that in the 60s when they were writing the Outer Space Treaty, because it does stipulate that these private actors do have to be supervised essentially by the states under which they're operating. So, you know, they certainly allowed for this, but I don't think at that point in time they necessarily could understand just the amount of power that those private companies could potentially amass. So that's definitely a major concern, especially when we start thinking about what other potential aggressive adversaries might be doing in the space domain in the years to come.
Yeah, definitely. And so on that, the commercial development of space and then as you talk about nation states' dependence on these companies now for, as you note in the article, good reasons, cost savings, innovation, and all those things. But it does exacerbate, as I've said, all elements of interstate competition, especially economic insecurity. So again, for those folks that are not as well-versed in poli-sci and IR, can you first talk about what the classical security dilemma is, and then the new one you see resulting from the growing impact of these commercial space markets on both space-faring nations and those that possess supporting capabilities that aren't necessarily space-faring yet? You know, some folks might say that this third space age is sort of a Faustian bargain.
Yeah, this has really, I think, become a greater concern, at least to me, and I believe some other people too. I mean, what we've essentially established for ourselves is, at least in the United States, essentially a monopoly on space launch with SpaceX. If all of a sudden tomorrow something happens and we have to shut down the Falcon launches from here on out so that we can find out what, you know, something that went wrong, the United States has essentially lost most of its access to space. Yes, there are other space launches out there. ULA is a player. Blue Origin should be coming online soon. But Blue Origin's still not proven to orbital. ULA is way more expensive, and they're really focusing on getting their new rocket, the Vulcan, up and going. But basic, just cheap access to space, we will completely lose if we lose SpaceX. And that's not unlike previous situations we've had, especially in the early 2000s when United Launch Alliance was formed out of Boeing and Lockheed Martin. It was a government-enforced monopoly at the time. So we've had this situation before, but the fact that we are so much more dependent on space now than then really makes this concerning. So we have ourselves a situation today where the United States in particular and other countries are almost entirely dependent on commercial actors like SpaceX. So, you know, in thinking about what flows from this, the security dilemma model, generally just a basic security dilemma, you have two countries. One starts, you know, building up what it thinks, at least, are its defensive capabilities. But country B is going to see that probably a different way and say, oh, yeah, no, that might not be just defensive. They might be building up their arms to come after me next. And so now I need to arm myself so that I'm prepared. And so then country A sees that happening and goes, well, now we need to build up more too. And so you get into what we call the spiral dynamic that leads to the arms races, much like nuclear weapons in the middle of the 20th century. And so when we think about security dilemmas, we think about it in that context in terms of weaponry or capabilities. There are other ways of looking at sort of those competition dynamics in different fields. And so when I think about the commercial space, I really feel it's a variety of this type of competitive dynamic. But what's happening here is instead of building up arms and weapons, we are building up our commercial space market. And so, you know, one of the things that scholars, including myself, I have to call myself out here as well, in previous research, have argued that, you know, more commercial space is a good thing for various reasons. In my previous work, I've argued, you know, it increases the cost of kinetic conflict in space and hopefully thereby decreases the potential for conflict. Other authors have argued that if we move military space stuff to the commercial sector as much as we can, whether that's communications or remote sensing, if we can move that to the private industry, then maybe that would send a message to our adversaries that that is meant in a more peaceful, benign way rather than defensive, and thereby try to ameliorate the security dilemma that way. However, the problem I realized in this and argue is a problem, if we just move the provider of our services from military/government to commercial, we're not actually getting rid of anything. We're just shifting where that dilemma is happening. And so when we say, you know, we're relying on Starlink for communications, it's not that we've stopped doing anything. It's just we've moved this into a different area. And so doing so basically leads us into a dependence on the commercial market. And therefore, we really have a really big incentive to think about how the commercial market is forming and encourage that so that we can use more of that. So what I argue is a similar thing is happening in China. China, you know, theoretically a communist state, a state-controlled economy, they have realized that they too need a commercial space market. In 2014, they laid this out and started to encourage these types of things happening. And they have done things to encourage commercial players to the extent that commercial private actors are allowed in that system. But they have started to do that. And we have realized that there is really big incentive for us to focus on our economic, not just in space, but our economic situation generally. If we think about investment in the CHIPS Act and investing in homegrown production of computer chips and making sure we're economically competitive with China in that way. And so what's sort of setting up here is the United States building up its commercial space market, China seeing that, reacting to it, building up their commercial space market. And all of a sudden we have that spiral, that competitive dynamic setting up in building up commercial space. And that really changes what it means to be a space power, because anybody can buy in to these commercial services, especially when we think about Ukraine today. By our traditional definitions of a space power, what a space power is, Ukraine is a space power. They have space capabilities because they're purchasing them. So if everybody can buy into being a space power, what it means to be a country that has space power is also changing to who has that market that can provide those capabilities. So I think instead of what we've tried to see the commercial market as sort of solving perhaps some security dilemma dynamic setting up, I don't think we're solving anything. I think we're just shifting where that's occurring.
Yeah, it's been fascinating or interesting. I'm not sure what the right term to use here is, but to watch SpaceX involvement in Ukraine and how it's in the 2-year span so far, they've kind of done both sides, right? At least what open source reporting is saying. And so it's very interesting to watch an ostensibly US actor, non-state actor, SpaceX, owned by a US, you know, owned in the US, but multinational, how that, you know, again, it's not new, that whole notion of you know, multinational corporations being a non-state actor and their influence. But with regard particularly to space, it's very interesting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, you know, it's really interesting because these commercials, space capabilities are having real strategic impact. In the lead up to Ukraine, the Biden administration was using commercial imagery to expose what Russia was doing and essentially rebut what Russia was attempting to do. And so, you know, we've also used commercial imagery to look and see what into China's nefarious actions and where they're perhaps building up nuclear silos. So these types of commercial capabilities are really having real strategic impact and really seeing this in a way that we haven't before. And there's even more of these types of capabilities coming online. Next month, a company called True Anomaly is going to be launching its first two prototype satellites that can do rendezvous and close proximity operations.
Really?
Yes. And so you start thinking about that and having a commercial company being able to get close to other satellites and image them. And you think about not just what a state actor could do with that, but what other commercial actors could do in buying into that. And it's a really unique sort of situation that I think we really need to think about as we start realizing the consequences of these types of actions.
Yeah. So on that, you know, divergent goals between a private actor, so to speak, and a state goal, or, you know, it diverges. Well, and diverges, like we think, sometimes I think we say, oh, it's going to be bad for the United States if it diverges, if a private actor diverges from state goals. But, you know, on the flip side, it's bad for China too, right? So, but in the article, you talk about implications like this. So if you can talk to the implications that you talk about in the article and share some of that.
I think there's a few. You know, for one, if we have to have a security dilemma, this might be the better one to have. You know, instead of having weapons sitting around on the shelf or in space, we're shifting to an economic competition, which can result in technological development, in further innovation, in further cost decreases. And all of those things have an economic and societal impact that can be positive. So if we want to have a competition, this might be the better one, the better place to have, where we can reap the benefits rather than increase fear and the potential for conflict. So this might be better to have. You know, two, I think, and sort of related to that, the United States might be better placed than China to win such a competition, given the ways in which we can support an open capitalistic market in ways that China has been thus far unwilling to do. So, you know, the United States might be better placed, again, to win a competition like this. You know, we also need to think about how much power we really want to give commercial actors and start thinking about, does become a really serious competitive dynamic. The question then becomes much like a regular security dilemma, like how do we break out of it? How do we stop an arms race? And so we need to probably start thinking about, if we want to continue empowering commercial actors in this way, how might we also ameliorate the pressure to keep going this way? So whether that is kind of give private actors a more formal standing in the international arena, or find ways of increasing the space market so that these companies are not fully dependent on government contracts. And that's one of the real problems here, because these companies, more than 50% of their income is still coming from a government. So they can't say no. if SpaceX confronted and said, hey, you know, the United States government says, hey, I want to launch this thing, and SpaceX goes, ooh, maybe not, they really can't say no because they need that money. But if we could give them other lifeline and give them more customers that are non-governmental and ensure essentially their economic survival, that could increase their freedom and an ability to say no to potentially bad things from any actor. So I think we need to give some thought as to what actual formal role we are prepared to give to non-state actors. It's probably not full standing equal to states, but I think we do need to give some thought to this and the ways in which we can give them some security away from the government, so that we can try to think about how this works. And then, again, of course, the United States government, we need to be thinking how best to use our commercial assets in a way that does not increase the danger. And so we really need to give some serious strategic thought to the role that commercial actors are going to play going forward.
I thought your point about that in the article was really well taken, because it's a proactive or reactive, I think, because if we don't give them a role, they already have a role.
Yeah.
Whenever the president or CEO of SpaceX says anything, it affects global markets. It affects our foreign policy. So we either react to the role that these play in a defensive way, or we be proactive. So again, I thought that was a really insightful observation in your article.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's fascinating to me, and this is another research question for me in a few years, you know, when I have time, or somebody here, here's your free research idea. Are commercial actors more easily deterred? Because they don't want their systems threatened, that costs them money, that costs them contracts. And so, you know, especially when we see SpaceX going, sorry, Ukraine, you can't use Starlink here. And they're essentially reacting to something the Russian government has said. That is a clear example of them being deterred. And so if we're thinking about using commercial companies in integrated deterrence and deterring other bad actors, that might not be the best way to go about doing that, because they might be more easily deterred than we are.
It's true. So going forward, you've alluded to them and talked about a little bit. If you want to close out with some recommendations that you've got.
Yeah, I think number one is we have to give serious thought to what we're doing with commercial actors. I know the Space Force has been working on a commercial strategy that needs to come out sooner than later. And we need to be thinking about the ways in which we're using them that could potentially increase the danger in space. And so I hope they're doing that, because, you know, the United States, I mean, let's be honest, we have a hard time being proactive with situations. And so the situation we find ourselves in now, we've essentially stumbled into willy-nilly, because, oh, we discovered commercial actors are good, and look at all these cool things we can do. Let's keep doing that. And we never stop to think about the consequences of it. So we need to start thinking like that. And we need to think about what it might take to break out of this situation should it become more difficult or more threatening, and really think about what we want to do with our private actors and how much power we want to give them, whether that's a formal seat at the table. They're already there. They are already involved in setting the rules of the road. And you know, this isn't going to go away. So, you know, how best can we support our commercial space actors? And because we are in a competition, we need to do that, but do it in a way that benefits all of us to the most extent, out increasing the danger of kinetic conflict. It all goes to, like, we need to do more in space and thinking about norms of behavior and rules of the road and all the things that we all know we need to do,
right?
But just can't get around to doing.
Right. Well, in closing, do you have anything, final thoughts on this, looking ahead, you know, your recommendations, but any closing thoughts?
Don't get me wrong. Like, I love commercial space. I love what SpaceX has done. Still tune in and watch their launches pretty often. And it's the landings that always get me. You know, commercial space is good. I mean, we have to keep them in play here. We just need to find a way to do it smartly and to really be, let's not go full bore into this without thinking of the ramifications.
That's great. Well, thank you very much, Wendy, for joining us on the podcast. And I commend your article to our listeners, our readers, in our winter 2023 issue, A Commercial Space Security Dilemma, The Dynamics of Commercial Competition in Space, again, in our winter 2023 issue of Ether. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.